You are listening to episode 127 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. The winner of Best Technology goes to...
Episode 127 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 2nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is the nominee for Best Supporting Co-host, James Furlow.
And the winner is James Furlow. Dude, boom. Check this out. I'm eating this muffin.
Whoa.
And there's like a cavern where there should be a blueberry. There's a big cavern of nothing.
Blue dye.
I feel cheated.
That is
I'm going to deduct a couple calories from my count on this.
Yeah, good luck.
I don't think it fully counts. Man, unbelievable.
You're right. And you know what the best part about that is? Where a blueberry muffin carries most of its calories is in the blueberry, not in the butter-laden bread around the blueberry.
Right. Exactly. Mm. Yeah, so what are they doing right now? Is it Oscars, Emmys?
Oscars. It's Oscars. The Oscars right now.
And I think I read that they already know who won overall or something. But
do they? Oscars 2014.
Didn't they?
Well, they'll know by the 28th Oscars. Best Picture, 12 Years a Slave. Best Actor in a Leading Role, Matthew McConaughey. Best Actress in a Leading Role, Kate Blanchett. Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Jared Leto. Best, I can't believe, what's his name? That one guy with the Titanic. DiCaprio.
Leonardo
didn't win anything. I'm actually kind of surprised.
Was he in a movie?
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street and The Great Gatsby.
Oh.
Best animated feature, Frozen, of course.
Shocker.
I know. Best original. This is the classic. Best original song, Let It Go by Frozen.
Let it go.
Is that how it goes?
I think that's part of it. That's part of the chorus. Yeah. I bought that song, so. There's validation right there.
Yeah. I was going to say, obviously, that one was the easy winner for that kind of stuff.
So how about this? I'm just going to do it since... I'll wait. We'll talk about Disney a little bit.
Okay. All right. Yeah, seriously. Don't get ahead of yourself. This is the pre-show.
It ties in with Frozen.
I know. It's coming. Don't worry. But this is the part of the show where we talk about things that have nothing to do with technology and usually have everything to do with movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you ever
you've joked about starting up a website. I won't give the name because it's an awesome name.
Thank you.
But the basic premise of it is that you review trailers and talk about the movie
trailers, yeah.
No. You don't even talk about the movie. You review the trailer
the quality
like
of the movie trailer.
Review movies.
Right.
Oh, that was a really good voiceover. Oh, I like those cutscenes, stuff like that.
Exactly.
So what I feel like is that these opening minutes is that way of feeding that need and desire of yours.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's how I interpret that.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, related to needs and desires, and being off topic, we hung out with some friends last night. We went over to their house and we played Creationary.
I've heard of that.
Darn fun game. Think Pictionary with Legos.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Pretty fun. So we went and played Legos. They saw the Lego movie. Again, they're like our age. And they're like, dude, it's fantastic. You got to go see it. I was like, that's right, Jess. That's right.
They were like, we saw it
in 3D because it's Legos. Now we're losers.
What? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It took me like so long to convince Jesse to go watch Frozen. When finally got her, I was like, dude, we're going to Disney World. I feel like you should know about this movie before we go to the place that created the movie. And so she was like, she's listening. She goes, so you're telling me we're going to Legoland?
Dude, it's, James,
dude, that would be,
it's,
that
it's would worth be awesome. It. If that's what it takes, it's worth it.
Yes, Jesse, that is exactly what I am saying. We should go watch the movie, and then we will go to Legoland.
Don't tell her it's like later on in life.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. An unspecified date in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie is.
But anyways, thought you would appreciate that. Creationary. I want to buy it. It's actually been on my wish list because someone talked about it, and I went, that sounds like fun. And now that I've played it, I can verify that, it is indeed fun.
Not only does it sound fun, but it is fun. So it's actually a Lego-branded game. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And how much does it cost?
Not a clue. Probably nothing. Not cheap.
It's retiring soon.
It's ooh, free.
You better jump on that, man. You can't even buy it through the Lego store anymore.
Huh. Oh, I've got it on my Amazon wish list.
$28.99. That's not bad. Not bad at all. Cool. Very cool. Well, so believe it or not, we actually got a lot to talk about this week other than movies and Legos and stuff. And this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or as we like to say, the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, we have a short disclosure that we want to give you. And by we, I mean James.
There we go. I was like, do you have something to share?
I do.
I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Hughie Packard. Yeah, so I'm the one who gets to be honest. No. Wait, your disclosure basically just said you can be honest. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on all sorts of social networks and stuff. My primary two are Twitter and Netflix. Not Netflix. Instagram. That was weird.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really weird.
Next Wigan.
Yeah,
wow, exactly. That's weird.
That was it. My handle for Instagram is NextWiggin4. NextWiggin4. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. That's how that rolls.
I am at James Furlow.
Boom. And on the Twitter.
JamesFurlow.com.
And if you want to get all sorts of more information about us, about the show, about everything we talk about, go to furloughbros.com. That's the show website. There you got links to the YouTube videos if you're coming from the podcast, links to the podcast if you're coming from YouTube. You can get show cuts, which are the topics broken down into bite-sized pieces if you don't want to listen to the whole 2 hours in one shot. I was doing a little math today. We're on episode 127. We talk about 2 hours per episode. That's like 250 hours of people talking. That's that's crazy. I mean, recorded hours. But you can check that all out there. And we also put links to all of the articles that we talk about and so many videos and stuff that ends up there. It's just a great resource if you want something interesting. And this week, we have got interesting stuff. And so highly recommend it. Go check it out.
There has been more than one occasion where I'm like, you know, someone will reference some tech thing, and I'll be like, this sounds really familiar. I have talked about this. And I will search the site and find the article and go, here it is. I knew we talked about it.
Nice. So,
yeah, I use it.
Yeah, me too. I like to show it to people. Just be like, it's awesome. Check it out. So, yeah. Oh, you know what I didn't? Oh, shoot. This is usually the part of the show where we do our first article, and I forgot to highlight our first article. So,
I had hinted at something Disney, and this is kind of cool, actually. They're debuting, it's like a Disney Anywhere. Well, it's Disney Movies Anywhere. And so, it's this website / app. I have no idea what the URL is for the website because they don't actually have it. Here we go. It's appstore.com/Disney.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Search the App Store. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. So essentially, you can buy. Can you rent? You can I don't see the word purchase. You can buy movies, any of their 420 films.
Wow, that's a lot of films.
And watch them. And they've got, it's like, it's the Disney vault, essentially. Pirates, Mary Poppins, Little Mermaid, Tangled, Nemo, Toy Story 3, Jungle Book, Wreck-It Ralph, Up, Tinkerbell. I don't know. They got Pirates. So am I guessing Narnia's?
No, I'm looking at it. Definitely got Narnia right there.
So here's what's cool about this. A, if you sign up – let me say what's also cool about this is that if you buy a movie through that service,
yeah,
you can also link your iTunes account, and it'll just download it on the iTunes for you.
See, now, and that to me was the important one, because I've got – obviously I've got the Apple TV rolling up in here if you listen to this show at all. So if I'm going to buy – you know, I don't mind buying Iron Man 3 through this service, but I want to be able to, you know, get it on the YouTube or on the iTunes. So the fact that I can get it on iTunes, it's perfect.
And by the way, if you sign up for it and connect it to your iTunes account, they'll give you The Incredibles for Frizzle.
Really?
Yep.
Wait. So how do you get The Incredibles for free? Just sign up.
There you go. All you got to do is create an account.
Okay.
And then connect it to your iTunes account. And you get a free copy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty low bar, which means you probably are accepting to get emails the rest of your life or something.
Well, whatever. In the modern age of decent, you know, spam, you know, sorting, you don't know how to deal with a little bit of Disney spam. You don't deserve an email account. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, unsubscribe. It's easy. So, yeah, but pretty cool. And what they're saying is they're doing it with iTunes for now, and they're trying to team up with other service providers, I can say it, to further stretch it. So I could see where eventually that becomes available in the Play Store, in the Amazon Store, other stores, I don't know. But, yeah. You know, where it becomes available for, like, on Chrome or something, or Chromecast, I mean. And, you know, you're watching that, but it's this idea. So what they're kind of doing is they are centralizing all of their movies, saying, hey, come here, buy it here. We can promote it to you from here. But then we recognize that you don't want to be stuck in our browser or on our app. You want to watch it where you're at. So we're also going to make it available to you through these other places. And it's kind of weird. It's their way of taking control of the media again without asking for 100% control.
Yeah,
it's an interesting shift.
It is an interesting shift, and one that I suspect they'll do well at, just because, you know, it's what they want, and they play pretty well with Apple, and I'm sure Apple will, you know, will like this. So it's a good way to start, you know, that process.
Well, and my experience has been, for the most part, Disney's pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, you know, so they do stuff. Like, one of the things they're adding is you can add parental restrictions. And so you can lock an iPad Touch so it can only play G-rated movies. You can even set it up where, how do they say it? Where it's like, you can only play one movie a day.
Really?
Stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, they give you, like, almost too much control as a concerned parent. But they're just... You know, they learn, hey, this is what people want. How can we figure out ways to, you know, to make this reasonable for people? And so they're starting on the path. Now, if you buy it, it is $20, and that sounds like a lot to me for a movie, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, you think about, like, what a DVD costs. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but a download, I mean, I'm like, I like the $9.99 movies.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean,
that's
once in a while, I'm like, all right, I'll pay the $12.99, but I don't like it.
Yeah, they got me with the Dark Knight trilogy, because it was $30 for all three in HD. I was like, oh, okay.
What? And you didn't tell me?
I think it's still available.
I'm interested in
check
that.
Check it out, man.
I think, all right, I'm going to write this down. I do not have the HD versions. And I've actually, because I got the... How did I do this? I got the first movie as a DVD, and I eventually ripped it into my computer because I got tired of keeping track of my DVDs.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, probably not supposed to do, but I don't feel bad about it because I bought the DVD, you know, and it's probably still sitting in my attic somewhere. So it's not HD. But what I hate about it is that if I want to watch it, it has to be on my computer.
Right.
And so I've really gotten into, like, you know, the really cool part, which is awesome, about buying from iTunes is you buy it, and you watch it, and then you delete it. And it's still there. And then the next time you want to watch it, you download it. It takes, you know, you got to wait 5 minutes and freeze up your hard drive.
That's why I do what I do. But very cool. I like that. So I'm going to pivot pretty hard from the movie. Well, I guess not that hard. But we're going to move from what's being filmed on the screen to what's actually doing the filming. And by filming, I mean recording, because it's without film anymore. So this week, there's kind of a new shift in camera technology that's going on, and it's kind of cool. Basically what it is, people are starting to talk, you know, for the last year and a half, everybody's been all about the megapixels. Obviously the Lumia.
Oh yeah. Give me some more pixels.
The Lumia 1020 sort of was the king of the megapixels. Cause they were like, with their 41 megapixel camera, just ridiculous.
Yeah. Something, you know, and awesome like that.
Yeah. One of the really cool things.
That's the only reason why you'd buy that phone, which is sad.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I were going to go with a Windows phone, that would be the one I would buy. And really and truly, I think if for some reason I couldn't have an iPhone, that was probably would probably be the phone I would go with. I actually thought it was a pretty cool.
Yeah,
phone.
You did like that phone.
I did. Yeah, I like the Windows phones. But anyways, the point is, basically, the Lumia 1020 is probably going to be the end of the line of that kind of technology, which is weird, because it kind of. It got way out ahead of everybody, and it had some really cool features. Like, one was this, like, massive digital zoom, because it had so many megapixels. Basically,
yeah, I really liked that one.
Right. Basically, what they could do is they could just, you know, any the pictures that they would download were standard size, which are, like, 10 megapixels is a pretty standard size picture, right? And so what they would do is they'd, like, if you had a 41 megapixel pixel camera, your normal picture size would be, like, every fourth pixel would be what they would capture, and they turn that into a standard size image. You wouldn't get these 41 right. megapixel images. So if you wanted to zoom, they basically just looked at smaller parts of the sensor, and everything was so packed that there was effectively a full resolution zoom, digital zoom, which was really cool, really neat. But the big problem is if you ever have picked up one of those phones with the really super high megapixels, they have like little lumps in them in where the camera is because the sensors are pretty big. They're pretty bulky. And so as a requisite, you need to do that. And the biggest problem that we were running into was that that's not a problem of the silicon chips are too big. And you know, we'll shrink them down over time. That's a limitation of the physics of a lens. You just need a certain amount of surface area in order to get that much light in there into the aperture and everything. And so it requires a certain amount of thickness, and there's a physics limitation there, that it goes beyond what we're able to manufacture. And so, you know, not necessarily as small as they could be, but they're pretty close, and yet they were still bigger than everything else. And so, you know, smart people keep looking for different options. And basically what they've come up with was this idea for a dual lens smartphone camera. One camera, two separate lenses. The conundrum raised by leaked images of HTC's forthcoming M8, smartphone. And basically what happens is you get two lenses, and generally this has been like used for like 3D stereoscopic type images, but that's not what the intention of this is. Basically what they're saying
is it could probably.
Well, yeah. The big trick here is Aquara Photonics. This is the company that's one of your big developers of it. Uses the two lenses with two different focal lengths. One lens is wide angle, while the other is at 3x zoom. This means you can switch lenses to magnify more distant subjects without resorting to digital zoom. In the test up shown in the video above, which compared dual lens system side-by-side with a traditional smartphone camera with both modules pointed at the test card about a foot away. The Core Photonics system outputted a clear 13-megapixel image regardless of whether it was at 1 or 3x zoom.
But that's kind of your choice, right? Like, you can do either 1 or 3.
No, see, that's what's cool is because they have the two different things two going simultaneously, they're talking about the fact that you get this depth of field thing and you get these transitional images, and basically what you can do is you can zoom in between those, and they will programmatically, they'll take into their little image processor core both of the sensor data, and they'll be able to output a picture that's a blending of the two different images that's a full resolution, version of the picture somewhere between the two. And I'm sure it's not perfect, but they claim it's pretty awesome. And basically what they said is, you know, not only not only does it work pretty well, but it is basically the end of the megapixel, like the giant megapixel cameras, as you're talking about. Like it's good enough where they're talking about all sorts of crazy things where it gives you really, really great depth of field because you have two different pictures. So they can do all sorts of like fading out, doing Gaussian blurs at different focal lengths automatically because you've got a depth of field. You actually know where everything is in the image. And so you can a lot of stuff that you used to have to do by hand, and very difficult, to do.
Whoa.
Images and stuff. Yeah. On top of all of this, it's small. It's a very small package, and so it fits in the standard small smartphone packages.
So this begs the question, are there any advantages to having three lenses?
Probably. I mean, it's probably...
And then how long before we've got, like, a row of lenses?
Actually, it's funny that you asked that question, James, because yeah, there are advantages to more lenses. One of the examples in one of these. Oh, where is it? Let me see if I can't do a little bit of searching. The Pelican Image 16 lenses, one camera. Qualcomm-backed Pelican Image takes a completely different approach to depth sensing.
That's a lot.
Its development of an array of 16 lenses in a 4x4 grid, each of which captures only red, green, or blue colors to produce 8 megapixel images. The process reduces noise by eliminating the crosstalk between pixels produced by regular CMOS sensors. Offset lens allow depth information to be captured passively, unlike the infrared Movidius system, enabling a variety of functions and effects. For example, Pelican can perform the same selective focus trick as the Movidius after a picture is taken, which is really cool. You can change the focus, like...
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. It can also bring clear images into low light and even 3D image stabilization for smooth video and decreased motion blur. The company has also shown off more drastic effects like isolating the subject using depth info, placing it into another shot. To answer your question, yeah, they're probably what it sounds like you might actually end up with is, is if this actually like goes someplace as opposed to megapixel counts. You might get lens counts, like how many lenses does your phone have? It's got like little eyeball, like a fly eyeball thing going on. So pretty cool, very cool. I like having a really good camera on my phone. So anything they can do to make it better, and keep it in the same small, sleek, beautiful package, the better. It'll be interesting. I think.
Well, yeah. As we've talked about, I've going on vacation, I'm still like, man, I feel like I should bring my big camera just in case. And,
right.
Especially for some of those far shots. But that's cool.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see when this, if when this sort of thing kind of gets integrated into, some of your heavyweight phones. It sounds like HTC is probably going to try to do this, but it's, who buys an HTC phone? And
not enough people, that's for sure.
Yeah. but it's one of those things where, if this is actually good technology and works well, You could see Samsung falling pretty quickly behind, and Apple's, you know, always looking for the best picture possible. And if this is a good solution, sort of thing, where, you know, they'll pour their engineering into it and just make a super quality picture. And I know their biggest problem so far has been the digital zoom one, or the zoom in general. That's something that they definitely have struggled with. Or I should say, they've never introduced a good solution, and they've never even tried to.
Just get closer.
Which is basically their way of saying, we don't have a good solution, so we're not going to give you a half-hearted solution. You know, as far as they're concerned, 41 megapixel camera, although it does allow you to do the digital zoom, is not a good solution because it takes over too much of the phone. And, you know, it defeats the purpose of having a small, slick device. So we'll see what they do.
Right.
But I'm sure as soon as you'll see Apple do anything, it'll be 2 years. I think Samsung will probably – I wouldn't be surprised to see Samsung try to come out with a really good camera-based, you know, sensor in a year. They usually move faster on that sort of thing. But it's cool. Very cool. Very cool. Very interesting.
Cool.
I liked it. So –
speaking of cool and interesting, Mobile World Congress is this week, which means a couple new products were unveiled, specifically with Samsung.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Sure. Speaking of Samsung, so Samsung introduced the new Galaxy S5.
Wait, is the 5S or the S5?
S5.
Oh, man, I cannot wait until next year, because then they will no longer... it'll still be bad, I'm sure. But.
Well, yeah.
Because they'll finally have passed Apple.
Right.
You know, because they'll be on the 6S and Apple will just be on the 6. And right. Then I guess maybe it's the year after that where they'll be on the 7S and Apple will just be on the 6S. 6S,
right.
And then it'll be okay.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
It'll never be okay.
It'll never, yeah. At that point, you know, Samsung will start to scale down their numbers so they can, you know, keep pace some more.
But the S5, huh?
Yeah, the S5, the Galaxy S5. It's the new phone coming out of Samsung and
flagship phone,
Basically, what everybody's saying is, if you like the Galaxy S4, good, because you're going to like this one. If you didn't like the Galaxy S4, too bad, because it's basically the Galaxy S4, but, you know, a little bit better.
Well, given their S4 sales, that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, S4 didn't sell as well as they wanted it to. I mean...
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Pretty well.
Samsung, yeah, it sold well, but didn't sell as well as they wanted it to. But they were totally conflicted because they got, you know, bashed, like, you know, over the head last year for their ridiculous, like, Broadway-style musical thing where they, like, you know, showed the phone off and everything. It was just awful. But, you know, they...
I don't even remember it. That's how memorable it was for me.
Oh, dude, it was... You don't remember? Oh, it was ridiculous. It was... I guess I did watch part of it, and it was terrible. They were trying to go toe-to-toe with the whole Apple, you know, keynote thing and try to get the same level of excitement and stuff, and it was just terrible. But this one was a much more subdued launch. They talked about a couple things. It's going to have Android 4.4 KitKat. Nice. It will indeed have a fingerprint scanner.
Whoa.
And, I know. Not letting Apple get away, you know, run away with that part of the field. Of course, everybody's first response was, it doesn't work that well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because it's like the swipey finger scanners. And they're getting better, but it's nothing special. It's not like with Apple where they refused to introduce it until it worked the way they wanted it to. And even Apple's scanners having problems. Like one of the things that, you know, they're saying that is with the Touch ID, you know, if you use it too much, it's supposed to learn, you know, it's supposed to, you know, it scans like 5 times, right? And gets a basic profile. Well, every time it scans, your finger's a little bit offset, it could get more and more of your finger. And so it actually learns your finger better and better and better as time goes on. And they said the problem is that whatever that algorithm that works on it is, it's slowly, that process can over time get it blurry and blurry and blurry to the point where it actually doesn't work as well after like 3 or 4 months, and you have to reset your fingerprint and start it over again. And they say they're putting out a software update to try to take care of that. But it's like, you know, Apple, you know, these fanatics for making technology that'll work and just simply works. Even they have a hard time with it. And Samsung, you know, basically threw this into their product at the last minute. It's an off the wall, you know, or off the shelf, fingerprint scanner. It's nothing special. It, you know, it works as well as fingerprint scanners work. And the other thing that they've done that you know, is just craziness to me. I actually wouldn't use it. Given the choice, I wouldn't use it because they've immediately opened up the fingerprint scanner to third-party access, which effectively means that where Apple, you know, went to extreme lengths to say, you know, there's no way for you to, from the operating system, get to the fingerprint data. The fingerprint data is stored in the secure enclave. It's a completely discrete part of the silicon chip. Yeah,
everyone was semi-freaking out over it.
Right, and everybody was like big NSA concerns, and like they're going to be giving all your, you know, this is great for the government, and Apple's like, it's impossible for anybody to get to it. Well, Samsung took the opposite, you know, stance on this, and were basically like, no, we're going to let everybody have access to it, which basically means if you're, you know, if from one, you know, unless they just did a terrible job of explaining the fact that, no, it was your information's safe and secure, which seems unlikely, as it seems like one of those points of interest that you'd really want to emphasize if it were true. Basically what they're doing is like, if you've got a platform that's, you know, got 90% of malware is written for Android, and, you know, you're talking about third party stuff, you download some video game app, all of a sudden it's, you know, Flappy Birds, and all of a sudden it's downloading your fingerprints and sending it to whoever they want. You're just like, oh, what the heck?
What's wrong with that?
I know, exactly. Well, yeah. And so, you know, that's I don't know. I don't know about this fingerprint.
That's concern, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm just really surprised, I guess, that, you know, that nobody cares. Nobody cares. I don't know. Whatever. Just from a security thing, you'd think that it was such a big deal just a couple months ago, 6 months ago, and now, whatever. So it's basically the same size as the Galaxy S4. It's 5.1 inches, just a tiny, teensy, it's a bit bigger. 1080p, super AMOLED screen. So naturally, it sounds like, yeah, it sounds like it's got a nice screen. It's got a 2800 milliamp hour battery, which is pointless for anybody to know about. I mean, it's got a lot of battery life. Actually, I do want to talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I just want to know, is that good or bad?
It's pretty good. It's definitely good. Oh, the other big thing is that it's like water and dust resistant, and which is really cool. So it's like, you can drop it in the, you know,
that is cool.
You can drop it in a bucket of water or the toilet and not destroy it, which is definitely one of those features that Android phones have been picking up on, and Apple has, you know, just been like, don't get it wet. And I'm hoping, you know, fingers crossed, Apple do something about it too, but we'll see. They, you know, sometimes they don't care. And that's not one of their priorities, as you pointed out.
That's right. It's a good word.
Yeah. Another thing that they got going is that they're definitely up in their game with the health technologies and stuff. So it's got a heart rate monitor built into it, like right next to the camera. Like, you can measure your heartbeat with your phone, which is kind of cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's got a 16-megapixel camera. What was the other thing? As far as just like your, you know, baseline specs go, it's got a 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 801 processor with 2 gigabytes of RAM, IR remote, NFC Bluetooth 4.0, Bluetooth Low Energy, all your stuff. It's got all your stuff, all your normal specifications. Apple fanboys have been ripping it up because it doesn't. It's only 32 bits. Jeez, how last year is that?
Man,
the year 64 bits.
2010 but, called. And they want their phone back.
Exactly. It's not even worth the time of day. You know, but it's funny. I mean, like
Dick called. That, by the way, there was a pun in there. Just
yeah. That's you know what?
Point that out.
Good point. Yeah, which it's funny. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like Android's not even built for a 64-bit 64-bit processor, and everybody's sitting there. Everybody when Apple came out with the iPhone 5S, it had a 64-bit processor. Everybody was like, oh, you know, that's going to be the first thing that Samsung does is put a 64-bit processor in there, even though it'll be pointless because they'll have to, you know, emulate a 32-bit operating system in order to make it work, and it won't have any advantage. It'll just cost more. And guess what? Samsung's not a bunch of idiots, and that's exactly – they're like, yeah, there's no point to have a 64-bit processor when you have a 32-bit operating system. So I guess we'll just put a 32-bit operating system in there, you know, chip in there. So yeah, they stuck with it. There are, it looks like I was reading somewhere there for other parts of the world, and I don't understand why they won't sell them to America because I think they don't like us. They're crazy, like 8-core chips and stuff. Those will be, they will sell Galaxy S5s that have the better, you know, super core phones. But once again, you know, it's nothing in Android is written for massively multi-threaded programming. So you're not necessarily getting any performance bumps that you want. You're just spending more money on it, with very few exceptions. And if you're looking for that kind of a specialized hardware, because you have that kind of specialized software, you know it and you know what you're looking for, and it's not that big of a deal. So I don't know. It seems to me like, you know, everybody's kind of bashing on them for, you know, taking it very conservatively, but I'm glad to see it. I don't think that it did anything great for Samsung last year, where they just introduced a whole slew of new features and you know, it turns off the phone when you look away from it, which is like the coolest of the new features that everybody, you know, they showed off. Whereas this is, I think, what people really want is they want, you know, or I should say people want to be excited. They want to see new features. But I think what really sells consistently is incremental improvements. And that's exactly what this is. It's a better screen. It's a better this. It's a better that. It's got one or two new reasonable features that people actually want and use. And it'll be collecting fingerprint data for the NSA, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds like they toned down some of their TouchWiz as well.
Yeah,
getting back to a little more Android
stock. So, you know, for me, I'm, you know,
looks nice.
I say the last Android phone I seriously used was the Galaxy S3, and I wasn't overly impressed. I didn't love the phone. I probably wouldn't go for the Galaxy S5 if I needed to. Like I've said, I'd probably go for a Windows phone. But as far as a flagship Android phone goes, it's pretty nice. It's good. It's fun. It does the job.
I'm still saying I would go with the Moto X on Republic Wireless if I were to switch over to Android.
Yeah. Hello, Moto. Yeah.
That's a cool carry phone. A camera around with me.
Yeah, right. but
oh, well. Yeah.
So that was not the only thing that Samsung announced this week.
Well, before you go on to that, tell me more about the battery life. You said that.
That's right. Sorry. So one of the things that they talked about when they talked about this phone was that it's got pretty good battery life. Not only does it have pretty good battery life, but it is like the best battery life out of any Android phone. It's ridiculous. They were talking about they've got this ultra power saving mode that can offer 24 hours of standby time on a 10% battery, which is crazy. It's got different things. This device packs a 2800 milliamp hour battery that the company claims can deliver 11 hours of video playback. What? Wow. 10 hours of, I mean, how much, you know, how much storage do you need in the phone in order to be able to store 11 hours of video playback? I mean, most people, that's the coolest part about
it. Well, you can insert 128 gigs sticking to it, so that's you can make it work.
That's a good point. I mean, but for me, somebody who, like, you know, who's been traveling around the world way more lately, and you get on a plane for 10 hours without any battery connections, that's awesome. That is definitely a selling point. To 11 hours. It's got 10 hours of web browsing over LTE, which, how fast would it take you to get through most of your data caps? Less than 10 hours?
Less than 10 hours.
Yeah, so this is that's super impressive. Samsung's press material also says the phone can offer 390 hours standby time with LTE on, 21 hours of talk time over WCDMA. So this thing's just basically got wicked battery life. And everyone was like, where did this come from? Because a 2800 milliamp hour battery is a big battery, but it's not a huge battery. It's not like, wow, that makes sense. Those numbers totally match up. Basically what happened was this company, or Samsung, has partnered with Lucid Logic, a company that's known, that knows a thing or two about optimizing battery life through software. And this is what's kind of impressive about it. The company has various battery-saving software technologies, including Web Extend, Nav Extend, and Game Extend, that can extend the battery of life on Android devices. Game Extend offers up to 50% more battery life during gameplay. Web Extend and Nav Extend each promise up to 25% more battery life for web browsing and GPS navigation apps, respectively, which, if you've ever used a GPS navigation app, that's really cool, too. That's what tears my batteries apart. These technologies independently determine the requirements of each type of app and whether it's a game, browser, GPS app, and optimizes power consumption. In addition to extended battery life, Lucid's battery life software solution also reduces the amount of heat produced by the device. Basically what happens is, and this is what's cool, is this Lucid Technologies, their Lucid Logic, their whole deal is they're like, this technology is cool, but it really needs to be put on the operating system level. It's got to be put deep down in the phone in order for it to work and really give you the advantages that they want. So Samsung teamed up with them. They put the two technologies together, and boom, you put a little bit bigger of battery in there and then add these cool life-extending stuff. And suddenly you have these phones that actually, you know, you can squeeze some serious battery life out of.
Cool.
I mean, a two-day phone would be a big deal, you know. And that, what I really like about it is it's all over software, you know. Apple has done some cool stuff, you know, doing it in silicon, which is really, you know, advantageous. But obviously there's always places to optimize. And so to get somebody who's in there, you know, doing it all over software is exciting, especially if you're just into the – oh, man. Sorry. Especially if you're just into the Android ecosystem and you want something that's, you know, going to be useful, you know, all over the place because, yeah, Samsung's got this for now, but it's something that other people can do without necessarily. You can do it as a software update. It's reverse compatible, which is cool. So, oh, it's cool technology. It'll be nice to – I wonder if they've got a deal with Samsung where they're exclusive or if they're – you know, you'll start to see it come in other phones too, but very neat. And that's, you know, all right, Apple, battery life bar has been set. It's time to get your game up. So then the other thing that they announced in Barcelona, and these ones are the ones that I'm actually kind of excited about. Basically they announced, 3 new Galaxy Gear watches, and this time they're not, they're not nearly as stupid and lame, which is pretty exciting. So your 3 different ones that they announced, they did the Samsung Gear 2. This one's basically a kind of cleaner version of the Samsung, just the Galaxy Gear. They got rid of the camera in the wristband, but I believe they added it into the main body of it.
It was called the Neo or something?
No. They got the Gear 2.
Oh, okay.
They got the Neo, and they've got the, the Neo in the Gear Fit. Let's see here. One of the big differences about this one is last couple of devices were running Android. These are running on Tizen, Apple, or I mean Samsung's, you know, proprietary operating system. Obviously, it'll still work with your Android phones as a sort of extension. Same basic principle as the last one, but it's not running Android. I lost it. So how do these two new gears differ cosmetically from the original Galaxy Gear that inspired them? For starters, Samsung's done away with the exposed metal screws of the Galaxy Gear's face in favor of sleeker, seamless finish and gentle blends into the band. The home button has been moved. The Gear 2 and Neo also sport a bit of user customization, as both now offer a multitude of wallpaper font options, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I mean, basically what they're talking about is you got these two new devices, and I'm trying to figure out, I read it, I know that I read it somewhere, the difference between the Neo and the 2.
Neo doesn't have a camera, the 2 does.
Okay, is that the big thing? Okay. That's what I thought. I thought one was basically the cheap one and one was the higher end one. And so it sounds like they've just kind of pared those down. They're trying to simplify and clean up the Galaxy Gear watches. And then there's the one that everyone's actually excited about because it's not just a pointless peripheral that these other two is, and that is the Galaxy Gear Fit. In this trio of Samsung smartwatch amigos, it's kind of the oddball. With its 1.84-inch curved Super AMOLED screen and narrow focus on health and wellness. So basically, it's like where the Galaxy Gear watches are all like square. This one's like a long rectangle. The Fit, like its Gear sibling, also features a swappable strap, Bluetooth 4.0, and an IP67 rating for water resistance. Nice. Except its battery is rated for longer use, up to 4 days, which is actually in par with like what your Fitbits are doing, which I think is really important. Of the bunch, it's definitely
longer
the
than
most
a day is a great start.
Right, exactly. It's definitely, of the bunch, it's definitely the most physically attractive gear option, and the one that we could really see users embracing. There'll be no shortage of apps for consumers that plunk down. So basically, the Fit, the biggest difference with the Fit from the other two is not only does it last a lot longer battery, but it also has a pedometer built into it and a heart rate monitor built into it. So that's cool. And it's funny for me, I'm obviously I've been out, you know, openly, you know, waiting for the iWatch, you know, solution mm-hmm. to come along. Mm-hmm. But I've also really wanted a heart rate monitor. That's been a big thing for me coming all along. And I could definitely see Samsung, especially if Apple doesn't come up with a good solution, make some major inroads in the health, area here. Cause it's got a lot of cool features of, you know, combining your smartwatch stuff with your like super health, technology things. And I don't know, it's a cool offering. Like they say, it's like, you know, price is obviously going to be a big thing. They haven't talked about how much it's going to cost yet. People are guessing it's going to the Fit specifically is going to try to come in at less than $200. Like say $179 is the guess. And the reason why $179 is kind of the guess of what the price point would be is because Nike, Fitbit, Jabo, they're all kind of playing in that between $100 and $200 ballpark. And so if you can play ball with them, even if you're at the higher end of it, but you do everything that those do, you do a little bit more because you do the heart rate monitor, you get better vitals, you get better statistics, and you can, you know, receive information from a smartphone, that's a pretty compelling product. And since it runs on Tizen and not Android, there's a good chance that, you know, Samsung might get a little bit creative and try to make it as a peripheral to an iPhone as well. I don't know if that's the sort of thing that they'd be willing to do, but if you were, you know,
yeah, I don't know.
I gotta say, I think it would be a huge mistake to cede that market to everybody else. You know, as you know, if they really wanted this to do well, you know, just making a basic pedometer app for the iPhone and allowing it to connect and, you know, push updates and stuff like the one that you have, Pebble Watch.
Pebble.
You know, it'd be a pretty compelling little product that they could sell, and people like me, without, you know, necessarily all the options in the world, could be very inclined to want to head in that direction. You know, it's funny. I mean, and it's funny. I at this point, I'm liking the Fitbit. I'm still waiting to see what Apple does. But, you know, you come Christmas time this year, if Apple doesn't have anything compelling and I'm bored of my Fitbit because I like new technology, you know, I could see that as being a compelling Christmas present. Sounds cool. They're, you know.
Yeah. Looks okay. They'll probably sell a couple of them.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet that they sell way more of the Fits than they do of the Neo or the 2. That would be my guess. I think most, from especially
the one that's getting the awesome reviews.
Yeah, especially
price.
What?
Part of it depends on price.
Oh, a huge part of it, but yeah, we'll see what they do. Are they smart? Are they dumb? Who knows? It's Samsung. But
yeah, it really could go either way.
Yeah. So, oh, very cool. Very, very, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're moving on.
I think you're still going, man.
Okay. Blah. So this one's really cool.
You highlighted all sorts of stuff, so you get to talk a lot.
That's true. You know, feel free to jump in if you want at any point.
Okay.
So this was awesome. What do you know about this P-cell stuff and like 5G cellular technology?
Nothing.
Okay. So I read an article this week, and it is a very heady article. I mean, it's like you want to get into some, you know, antenna theory stuff, read this article. I like this kind of stuff, and it was a bit much for me. Basically, this guy gets into like how does current cell phone technology work, and what's the result of this? A couple weeks ago, basically, there was a demonstration of what they called P-cell technology, and it was this idea of they were demonstrating on relatively standard hardware, you know, your LTE-capable hardware. They were demonstrating speeds that were crazy fast. I mean, just huge boosts in speed. And what they were talking about was like 5G quality speeds, right? Because right now we're on 4G. And 4G, 5G, all of that's just a lot of that's meaningless, you know, marketing terminology at this point, because it's not a certified data set. But it's got general meanings. And basically what they're saying is it's a big enough jump in speed where it might be considered a next generation speed bump. And what's really cool about it is, like I said, it works as an upgrade to, you know, standard handset hardware. So this is pretty cool. Huge. I'm just going to read a little bit of this article from him. Basically, he asks a couple of questions. Is this going to revolutionize wireless communication? While these demos alone don't necessarily demonstrate speeds beyond theoretically capable with what is theoretically capable with LTE systems today, I think the evidence is clear that this technology can offer a solution to the, quote, spectrum crunch problem. So I'd say yes, from a mobile consumer standpoint. It'll just seem like the next step in evolution from 4G to 5G. Much faster, more consistent speeds, lower latency. Now, whether or not this actually gets developed by the carriers is another matter altogether. Is this invention completely unique? No. Last year, he gets into basically, no, this is not necessarily unique in its theory. And then they asked, have they broken Shannon limit or the Shannon limit? Which let me grab the, no, they've just sidestepped it. Each user has their own channel and can use it up to the full Shannon limit without having to share it with anyone else. The Shannon and Harley theorem in information theory, the Shannon Hartley theory tells the maximum rate at which information can be transmitted over a communication channel of specified bandwidth in the presence of noise. It is an application of noisy channel coding. So basically what happens is when you have a cell phone system working out there, right, there's all sorts of radio frequencies out there going left, right, sideways, all over the place, getting in your way. And so there's this particular limit that you of data that you can get from your phone to the cellular towers, and really and truly, when we do like fiber optics, effectively what we're doing is we're using light to transmit a type of radio, you know, radio frequency, electromagnetic spectrum, just like we to transmit, just like we would with radio waves. It's the same thing, just a different frequency, right? And it's effectively the same technology. The only difference is that over fiber optics, there's no light coming in, there's no light going out, there's nothing to introduce noise, to introduce interference, and so you're able to get these super high speeds, tons and tons of data. Whereas over the open world, all you got tons of noise all over the place. And most of the noise is coming from other cell phone towers, because
nice.
If you've ever actually like looked at a cell phone tower, they've got like a bunch of little things hanging off of them. Those are all like antennas and different antennas for different carriers and different signals. And there's just a ton of like noise being generated by these things that are all kind of crossing each other out. And so basically what this guy gets into, and this is a super interesting article if you're into this sort of thing, and I'll try to summarize it as best I can. Basically what he gets into is like the idea of how we try to deal with that noise today. One of the things that we do is we try to like tune everything as quiet as possible. You know, cell phones are capable of outputting really powerful signals, but we haven't put out the weakest signal possible to still continue to talk to the cell phone towers so that they don't generate too much noise. They kind of, everything's quiet. And it's funny, if you've ever had your phone, if you've ever like had it in airplane mode and like turned it on and you've watched your battery die a couple of percentage points in like 5 minutes while it's searching, that's basically what it's doing, is it's turned the transmitter all the way up while it's looking for any towers around it, because it doesn't know where the nearest tower is. And so it's just blasting out radiation. Yeah. And so when everybody turns on their phone at the same time as the airplane lands, and it takes you even longer to find a cell phone antenna, basically what's happening is you're all fighting each other, not just to find the closest antenna, but you're all just dropping a ton of noise into this little.
That's also probably what happened at our sister's graduation, where we all lost our signal with a sea of people.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was the first one goes, and so it boosts the signal, and then it just domino effects.
Yeah,
everybody's just like these droplets of rain, essentially, that ripple throughout the crowd, and then before you know it, all of our phones are screaming, "No, I can't connect."
Yeah, exactly. Another thing that they do is that you try to use different frequencies, so your phone's capable of like tuning to different stuff, so each channel gets a different frequency. They do time division, multiple axis. So one of the great analogies for this is the idea of like you're in a cocktail party, right? And you got people trying to talk to each other. Some are close by, some are across the room, and they're all trying to talk. And that noise, in that sense, is literally noise. It's the other conversations that would distract you from the conversation you're having. Quieting everybody down to the lowest possible is, you know, your conversation with the one person you're trying to have it is as loud as it needs to be. And since everybody else is quiet, that's good. One is you change the frequency. So you're just listening for the one, you know, the deep tones, because you're on the deep tone channel. So everybody everybody in your conversation is speaking in the here's a high tone channel, you know, like, and so you can ignore the other stuff. There's also the time division multiple access where everybody talks, you know, everybody is given a period of time to talk and they only talk during that period. And so, like, one of the things, and all of these are technologies that are implemented in cell phone technology. So, like, you know, the everybody gets all each of, you know, all of those things that are hanging off of the cell phone antenna. Each one of those are antennas with different frequencies. So those are different channels that it can talk to. And if a cell phone antenna gets too many cell phones attached to it, it starts doing time division multiple access. So basically it says this phone gets this period of time, this phone gets this period of time. And if you get enough phones on there, all of a sudden it just goes, okay, I've got too many phones. You're out of luck. Sorry, I'm not talking to you anymore. And that's when you start to get dropped phone calls and dropped service and stuff. So these are all the different things that you can do, and basically that are currently technologies that are in use that allow us to do more and more data, more and more cell phones. Effectively, so we have talked about this quite a lot over the last year, so I'll cover it briefly. But basically, there's still a lot of noise. There's still a lot messing around with everything. And so effectively, what somebody wants to come up with is the Bose headphone solution. And some examples of this technology over the last couple of years has been, you know, obviously Bose noise cancellation, where there's a little receiver on the outside of the headphones that's getting a signal coming in, and then it takes that signal, it combines it with your, it creates an inverse, and it combines the inverse with your sound, and so with your music. And so the sound from the outside is getting penetrating into your headphones. Then it's mixing with this new signal that's the inverse and your music. And the inverse and the noise from the outside, they cancel out, create a flat, and then all that's left is your music. So that's how noise cancellation headphones work, right, in basic technology terms. We talked about probably 2 or 3 months ago about that one device that you, like, attach it to your window. And it effectively does that for your window, so you can, like, turn off the sound on the outside world. We talked about this with fiber optics, because as much as fiber optics don't have a noise problem, they do have a noise problem. And and you can measure that noise. It's just far less. But you can measure that noise, and you can kind of give information, and you can build up signals that you can figure out where to get rid of that noise. And so effectively what they talked about building new routers. They would send these cancellation signals along with it and allow you to do way faster speeds over traditional fiber optics. This is like a branch of technology, that's really been going gangbusters recently. Another example is how we do we got these super powerful telescopes on Earth, right? But we have a hard time seeing through the atmosphere because it creates the signals to disperse. So to deal with that, what we do is we shoot giant lasers in outer space, and we know what that laser is supposed to look like. So when we get back the information, when we look at that laser that's hitting the moon or going off wherever, we look at the laser and we say, okay, this is the disturbance that's happening in the atmosphere right now based on this known source. So we're going to create a cancellation signal to clean that up. And when we clean up the laser, it also clears up all the stars, and all of a sudden we can see all the stars with crystal clear vision. So these are all examples where basically he's coming up with this idea of, we can create theoretically some sort of a cancellation signal to get rid of all that noise. So we can use all of these technologies to get the best signal that we can. There's still a lot of noise. Maybe we can do something to go even a step further to really create great quality signals. And obviously this is all being demonstrated earlier, and the answer is yes. And so one of the cool things that they're doing is, like, they're talking about having to implement, you know, it creating that with the Bose headphones. They work great because basically what happens is the actual headphone creates a barrier that the music has to, or the outside sound has to go through. And it gives enough time for them to measure the music, create the inverse signal, and the ambient noise, create the inverse signal and inject it, by the time the ambient noise gets into your ear, and so they're hitting each other at the same time. So it creates that latency. Well, do that with your phone is, like, way more difficult. So basically what you have to have is you have to have the towers know what signal they need to send in order to get your information, get the information directly to you. And so basically what this how this P-cell stuff works is that's what they do. They create all these little towers. It actually would have to require more towers to be able to get a better profile of the noise that's in the environment. And then they'd have these different, and this article goes on, he gets deep into the technical stuff on here, and I got a little bit lost, so don't feel bad if you get lost. Unless this is like your field of expertise, and then if you get lost,
I skimmed through it and went, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, pretty much. So basically what happens is they talk about this idea they can create these vectorized signals, and this is really cool because they can use static stuff, and they can create these dynamic signals that all kind of mesh together, and they all mesh together at a specific location. And that specific location, guess what? Happens to be your cell phone. And so they figured out how to, and this is just like, this stuff blows me away that we can do this. Because it like makes sense in kind of like a very simplified way, but you're like, well, how do we even, what the heck? And so basically what they've done is they say, yeah, as you're walking with your phone, they can track your phone. They know where it's moving. And because they know where your phone is and they know the noise in the environment, they can generate what they call these beams of information that they're shooting to your cell phone. And as you're walking around, your cell phone's getting all this data, and it's really cool. And it's you basically end up with, quote, your own channel, which is what they were talking about earlier with the Shannon limit, is because you get your own channel and all the noise has been canceled out, you get these super fast data speeds. It seems to be working really well, and they've got a bunch of different questions about, like, you know, is this something that's implementable into other things, like, I don't know, Wi-Fi? And his answer is yes, but there's not really any point to, because it doesn't have the same spectrum crunch problems that you do with P-cell. How much overhead is involved in gathering the channel of state information? That's kind of the big question, is generating all this information, is it something that we can practically do with computers today? And that's the big question that needs to be answered from a research perspective. Does it make sense to build this technology out? We'll continue on. But the reason, or they'll continue to do research on that, but the reason I really wanted to bring this up is because this guy's really smart. This guy who's writing this article. And they added a little bit of a nugget of information early on in this demonstration. And they basically were like, hey, there's some really cool applications for this technology. And they literally said, like, we've even given hints in the intro video to this, in the introduction to this video. And which got this guy really curious because he wanted to figure out what they're talking about. But they basically were like, you know, we're not going to give away all of our you know, cool information yet, but we just want to let you know that it's coming. And basically what this guy came down to is, and this is when it really hits into my bell horn, because up to this point, I thought, like, P-cell, yeah, it's interesting, but whatever, like, I'll read about it later. It's, you know, antenna technology. What? I'm so glad I read this article, though, because basically what this guy says is, back in the day, Nikola Tesla, wicked smart, came up with the radio a decade before Marconi did. It came up with, you know, alternating current, electricity. He worked with Edison and helped build the DC power. I mean, the guy's smart, right? You're like, legendarily smart. You know, there's a lot of evidence that to him doing the first x-rays ever and just never published it, so he doesn't get really credit for it, even though he was first. Guy is wicked smart, but if you've ever watched a movie, what was the one movie with Batman and Wolverine, but they were magicians, and they, like, created copies of each other, The Prestige. Did you ever see The Prestige?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So part of the whole deal there is they actually meet Nikola Tesla, and he, like, shows them the wireless power transmission stuff, right? Well, like, that's legit. Like, yeah, it was actually Nikola Tesla was working on that, and they were talking about the idea of using, like, microwaves to send power, and that was always something that was, like, really cool. There's been demonstrations. It definitely works, but one of the biggest problems with it is that to generate these, like, these microwaves that are powerful enough to power things off in the distance, you have to have these massively powerful microwave transmitters, and, like, they fry everything, like, literally melt your face off levels of energy, and they always required to be pointed at a specific direction, and so they, you know, you'd have these antennas that needed to move around and track your object, and so, you know, all the different types of wireless power that we've talked about in the, you know, on this show, they're always about, like, magnetic resonance and stuff. They're relatively low power, they're relatively safe. But, you know, Tesla was, like, the first, and I've always thought it was interesting, but there's too many, like, practical problems to actually ever expect to be able to use that. Well, basically, this guy who wrote this article was like, look, this whole P-cell stuff is really, really cool technology for cell phones. But basically everything that they're doing, you could do with microwaves. And what's really, really cool about that is what we talked about earlier was you take a bunch of antennas and you build these – you build a beam that essentially consolidates at a single location. So you start with a bunch of low-powered signals that all cancel out until they get to where they need to be at a highly focused point. You can move that point around just by changing the signal without actually changing the location of the transmitters and everything. And effectively, all of the old issues that came with the wireless transmission of power that were associated with Nikola Tesla's designs go away.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's really cool. That's really awesome. And he's like, and he goes, in the introduction video, they show a car driving down a highway, and the implication was that you could have your cell phone and this technology would work as you drive down the highway. That's what everybody who watched it saw. But this guy came back around and said, what if, you know, they talked about there was a hint to what this technology could do. What if the hint was not only can we, you know, power your cell phone, you know, with a ton of data, but we can actually power your car with electricity using this exact same technology. And his conclusion was like, I'm not even sure if that's what they were going at, but definitely given how they've explained the technology to work, this is a practical application of the technology. You could build wireless transmitters and do it in a safe, effective way that doesn't, you know, doesn't melt people's bodies and would work as, you know, a powering, a source of super high energetic power. So that's really exciting.
Wow, that is cool.
Yeah. And you know, it'll be really, 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 really interesting to see, you know, kind of how this develops and just watch it over the years. I'm sure that, you know, it's still years away, but the fact that, you know, this is getting out there is pretty cool. And, you know, the reality of it is if this is really possible, if this guy's not, you know, completely making it up and everybody's like, you know, yeah, this is legitimately what we can do. It's a matter of when, not if, you know, we'll be using this technology, whether it's for military applications, space shuttles, or, you know, powering your cell phone from across the room. So pretty exciting. I don't know. I thought it was really, really cool. I thought it was worth the really long
read. So that put Tesla's Gigafactory out of business?
Not necessarily, because I still think there's a place for batteries from a temporary perspective, but it definitely will limit the necessity for how many batteries they're going to be building. So obviously that was a segue to the Gigafactory. Basically, what's going on? Tesla, they want to be able to sell, you know, affordable cars, their next model car. And one of the most expensive parts of the whole procedure is building batteries, because they have to buy batteries directly from somebody else. So they figure, hey, we vertically integrate, we build our own batteries. We can, if we do it at a big enough scale, we can get the price down way more, is what Elon Musk is saying. And
makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's going to require them to build a gigantic factory. How big? Gigabig. Like, they're calling it the Gigafactory, and they will basically just be building batteries. The one problem that they're going to run into is that they need this factory to have a massive amount of yield in order for it to economically work out. And to the effect of, you know, we're not going to be building that many cars. In fact, eventually we want to build that many cars, but we need to be able to build and sell more batteries than we'll need for our own supply at first. And so that's where, if you've like heard any rumors about Apple buying Tesla in the last week or two, and everybody's been denying it. Basically, they came, like, basically the Tesla Gigafactory kind of cleared all that up, because what they really think was going on is going on is Elon Musk said, hey, we want to build batteries in America. We know you want to buy stuff from America, so how about we do this? How about you give us a ton of money, like you did with the Sapphire Glass dudes? We'll build a factory, and we'll give you a bunch of our yield. And so the theory so far, and nobody's confirmed this, but nobody's really denied it either, is that Apple's going to make a rather sizable investment in Tesla for the purpose of building this Gigafactory, and Apple will start buying all their batteries from Tesla for the iPhones and the iPads, and was one of the biggest purchasers of batteries in the world. That'd be a pretty good deal for Tesla. Would meet that would their be needs. Cool. Yeah. So,
that'd be good for both of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
That was quite cool.
Cool.
Oh my goodness. Do you only have one more article? We'll come back around to that, I guess.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right. You were busy this week.
Busy week. It was a busy week.
Did you get everything done that you needed to get done?
Yeah, I've got a couple more hours of reading I need to do tonight, but for the most part, yeah.
Well, the good news is you have an hour and a half left of tonight, so before it goes tomorrow morning. So HTC wants to turn all of their phones into a giant botnet.
That's good.
Yeah, except it's a benevolent botnet. Basically, what they want to do is they want to harness the smartphone's idle power. So everybody's got all these little computers in their pocket, and they want to use it. And HTC is wacky in a good way. Basically, what they're doing is they're making an app. You download this app to your phone, and it monitors for when your phone is plugged into a wall and connected to Wi-Fi. So basically, when you're at home and asleep, or at work and charging your phone. And when the phone is idle, so it's not really doing anything. It's effectively they think of this idle time as like, there's no chance of us drawing down your cell data, so we can connect to the Wi-Fi when you get free and limited data. You're connected to power, so we're not going to draw down your battery. And when that's happening, we're going to use your phone for its processing power. And effectively what's going on is you've got there's all sorts of researchers all over the world that are doing these, you know, massively multi-threaded, modeling stuff. So like modeling environmental concerns, trying to, you know, come up with proteins and do all sorts of biological modeling, really, you know, huge scale computational, projects. And there are supercomputers all over the world at different universities and research centers that people share time on. And HTC has basically said, look, if we can get everybody who owns an HTC phone to download this app, on average, when phones are plugged in and powered up and doing this, will effectively have the power of a supercomputer if everybody were to cooperate. And so all of a sudden they're like, you know, and they're talking about like how not just a supercomputer, but like one of your super high-end top four supercomputers in the world. This would be a massively powerful thing. And effectively it's what a botnet is. You know, a botnet is you've got a bunch of computers that all work together to do some task, and each one has got its own thing, and each is its own core, and they're all talking over the internet. So it's kind of this, like I said, it's a benevolent botnet is what you want to turn your phones into. And these would be used for different research processes or research modeling process stuff. So effectively what will happen is, you'll come up with some sort of a problem. We want to model the environment. Well, when you model and do an environmental model, effectively what it is a bunch of matrix math. I mean, a bunch, like billions of nodes worth of matrices, which is just crunching numbers, just doing matrix math again and again and again and again. And what's really cool about matrix math, if you know anything about matrices, is you can break them down even to smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller pieces until everybody can do a piece of it. So if you've got like a million cores, you can break gigantic matrices down into tiny little ones, and everybody will just do one step calculation, return the information, and you compile it back into your final your final thing. And so that's why they're really great for these massively multi-threaded modeling type approaches. And that's why it would work here, is because effectively everybody would have one node that they could process with on their phone. And you would get your little matrix that your phone has to crunch numbers on. It would do all its computation. It'd send it back somewhere, assuming it's probably some server farm owned by HTC. It would be doing the distribution and recollection of the data. And then your researchers would get their data back. Boom. And they get their cool little model. So it's a cool project.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, I know people have made back in the day, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago, all Macs have like have MacBook Pros, MacBooks have accelerometers in them, because originally the intention was if it ever felt sharp G, it would actually retract the needle from the hard drive disk to protect the hard drive. It was a safety feature and it worked pretty dang well. But what it ended up doing was it ended up with every single MacBook has an accelerometer in it. And so what they were encouraging people to do for a while was to download an application which would basically track earthquakes. And so it would just run in the background monitoring the accelerometer. And if it ever noticed a propagating shockwave, it could make, it would alert stuff. And they were talking about, you know, an actual distributed system where everybody's kind of working together. If you had enough nodes, and it wouldn't take very many with, you know, an earthquake, but if you had enough nodes, you could actually track these things in real time and then give people that are, you know, 50 miles, 60 miles away a 30-second heads up of, hey, there's an earthquake coming. and you could actually really effectively start to A, monitor, and B, do something in the ballpark of real alerts. And that was their big selling feature, right? They said, you know, if you download this, we're going to be running in the background, we're going to be monitoring your computer, and if you're on the receiving end of one of these earthquakes, you're actually in the zone of the earthquake, but it hasn't reached you yet, we'll alert you that there's an earthquake coming. And so you can give people a heads up based on that information. So that was just, you know, which is cool and fascinating. I'm a big fan of these kinds of projects. And the same, like, and there's a part of me that's like, man, I wish it would just build them in, like, stock, you know. The heck, why not? But I don't, people don't like that, I don't know. But if I had an HTC phone, I would totally download this app. Be part of the research revolution.
Have at it. I probably wouldn't. I value my, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I would.
Why not?
Nah, probably not. I don't know. I hate contributing to that kind of stuff. I'm just not that kind of person.
You like to, when my phone's idle, I want it to be idle.
Yeah. preserve my battery life. Gosh.
Well, but it's only when the phone is
plugged.
I know.
I know.
It's ridiculous, James. Be a better person.
I'm always, every time I go to Safeway, too, I'm like, I don't want to round up. Quit talking to me. Come on.
Yeah, okay. I actually don't do that either. But, it's like, I know it makes me to look like a total screw.
I'm like, why don't you round up? Gosh.
Exactly. I know it makes me seem like a complete Scrooge McDuck when I'm like, I walk in, like, would you like to donate $1 to breast cancer? And I'm always like, no. And it's like, at first it felt like socially when they first started asking if you wanted to do it, before I was completely numb to saying no. I used to feel bad about it, but the rationale was always like, I actually believe in giving to organizations when I know what the organization's about. I don't actually like to give impromptu, like I'm, you know, in a moment's notice, to an organization I have no knowledge of. I don't know how much money they spend. I don't know what their overhead is. I don't know how many, you know, cents on the dollar actually get to, you know, breast cancer awareness or whatever, you know, they're trying to sell me. And, you know, it's just I don't give to those either. Walgreens is the worst, man. Constantly hitting you up. Want to give $5 to this organization? No, I don't. Go away.
See, whereas,
bomb bug.
Again, I like the way they do it. When you go to the Disney World Animal Kingdom, they donate a part of your ticket price to their, you know, animal organization. They don't ask you, would you like to round up on your ticket? No, it costs the same as all the other parks, and Disney donates. They round down, essentially.
Right. And, which is, you know, that's how
I'm like, cool. That's cool. And, you know, tell me that. Hey, we decided part of your purchase, you know, you bought eggs, and we're letting all purchase of eggs. We're rounding down on our side so that we can give to it. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, even if you charge more for eggs, like, I'm still, you know, I like shopping at Safeway. I'm probably still going to shop for Safeway, even if my eggs cost 50 cents more so you can give 50 cents to a charity of your, you know, of your. But, you know, I'm assuming that if, you know, the Safeway is going to go out of their way to, you know, to donate that kind of money, they're going to, you know, they're not, it's going to, they're going to go through the due diligence of making sure it's a good organization. And the moral onus of doing that's not on me. Whereas with my money, I feel like it is, so I'm okay with that, you know, whatever.
Then you just feel like they're, I don't know, on one level I get it, again, it's just like that app, but on the other you're like, man, they are totally taking advantage of a social situation here and doing it, and you're like, all right.
I say, cool. Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something more interesting, like drone ships.
Yeah, okay, so there's a company out there. They want to be the Rolls Royce of the ocean. Guess what company it is? Mm. You're supposed
Rolls
to guess.
Royce?
Yes, it is Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce?
Yeah.
That was my guess.
basically, what they're they want to make drone freighter ships, which is kind of cool. We've talked about, I don't know, have we ever talked about it on the show? That one of my dreams is to own a really big boat, like big, like I want to own a boat. I want to own a freighter. I don't know what I would do with it. I guess freight things. All right.
Put your house on it.
Exactly. I like really big boats.
That could be your vacation home, because your normal home is inside of your airplane hangar.
Exactly. It's funny, like, I don't even like the ocean that much, but what I really like are battle cruisers from space epics, which the closest thing to a battle cruiser from a space epic is a really big boat.
It's a battle cruiser.
Exactly. So this is my compromise. And some of the biggest boats in the world are freighters. It's just cool. It's very cool. Anyways, Rolls-Royce is trying to tech it up a little bit, and they've started development of drone freighters, and they're trying to get those going. What's awesome about it is classic mechanization. The people that have the biggest problem with this are the people that are the unions for the people that actually do freighter ships. They're like, this is ridiculous. You know, you'll never, no drone will ever replace human intuition and humans on a boat. Like, you guys are crazy. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, freighters have gone from like crews of like 40 people down to like 5 because they're basically driven by computers nowadays anyways. There's just the captains like controlling joysticks. Are you serious? Like, what are you talking about? And I'm assuming that these drone ships aren't going to be like, you know, completely autonomous. They're going to have, you know, they're going to have some sat link back to some dude who's sitting in Colorado or wherever, and some factory, and he's just going to be, or some, you know, building is going to have like 30 monitors in front of him, and each 4 monitor is going to be, you know, one ship, and he's going to be the pilot of all of these different ships all over the world. Like, it's not like there's going to be no humans there. And basically what they're saying is like, The unions are trying to protect jobs. That's what they're going for. It's a ridiculous argument, and they know it, but they've got to make an argument because they're trying to protect their employees. It's like, okay, that's fine. But everyone's saying, like, but the shipper guys, the guys that own these things and, you know, have to pay the salaries of the people on the boats, they want to get rid of the people on the boats as quickly as possible. So, like, yeah. These ships are basically driven by themselves anyways. Most of the horrible, horrendous accidents that have happened in the last decade have been when a human being was piloting the boat instead of the computer, which is the case with most airplane crashes nowadays. It's like, it's when the human takes over that's where the problems start. And not just because humans take over in a bad situation, but it's because it's usually humans take over and then all of a sudden a bad situation arises. And so they're just like, yeah, let's get the human element out of here. And then the other big thing is they're like, one of the biggest problems that you have with like ships being taken over is that A, you know, these pirates, they come along, they take over the crew, they kill the crew, crew members die, and then they sit at the captainship and they control these boats. If the boat is fully armed and there's no human beings on board and there's no way to control the boat from the boat, really makes them less than compelling targets for pirates. Because the pirates are like, you know, they'll come up to the boat and they'll get onto the boat and then they'll just be standing there, all these locked boxes. And what are we supposed to do now? We can't get in them. We can't bring them back to shore. We can't bring the whole boat back to shore. Like, and, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the army shows up and, oh, there's a moving person on the boat. Boom. You know, and I was probably a little bit cavalier about people getting shot, especially with Captain Phillips being one of your nominated movies this year. But but you know, the fact remains, it would be way safer, and they legitimately sit there and they say, you know, from a pirating perspective, they'll make way less sense to hit an automated drone boat than a boat where you can take over the boat, because then you'll have a boat as opposed to this where you'll have a boat that's still going to its destination no matter what you do. You have to damage and destroy the boat in order to stop it from moving, which is a surefire way of getting yourself killed. And so, you know, they're arguing that, no, this will make sense in the long run, which means that it's just a matter of time. I mean, it might be a slow transition as the unions fight it, but there's no reason to expect that this won't be the only way that things are shipped in 20 years. Because it just doesn't make any sense to – crews are really expensive and they're dangerous. And that they're – you know, it's bad for your livelihood. So
you remember a couple weeks ago I shared a story of that Twitter user @N who lost his handle and
yeah,
the person went through PayPal and GoDaddy and then got their Gmail account. And
wasn't that Twitter account worth quite a bit of money, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, he got offered a lot of money for it, you know, like 50 grand or something like that.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and this person kind of took it all or blackmailed him, essentially. You know, said, I will delete all of your stuff. Yeah, good news. He got it back.
Oh, nice. Yeah, how did that come to be fruition?
You know, I don't know. They're not really talking yet. They just know that he's all good. It's been fixed.
Huh.
But yeah, so just wanted to follow up on that. The internet That's cool. has been made right. It's been restored. Yes. Yeah.
That's cool. That would be really, really frustrating if he didn't get his stuff back, you know. I hope they come out with a statement and explain what happened, you know, because I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. He might do a follow-up post, but I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm sure they had to do some sort of a verification of the story. I'm positive that's what took so long, is it was like, basically, there's a guy claiming, somebody stole my ad and account, and how do you know? Like, you got to figure out that, yes, they stole it, and, you know, mm-hmm. it's actually gone, and it wasn't just, you know, two friends that are having a tiff, and the one guy wants to steal it, and so he came up with this convincing story.
Right.
But, you know. So, this is exciting. So, BlackBerry's got punched in the face again this week.
Good.
I know. So BlackBerry, they're, you know, what are they famous for? They're secure. They've got security. Their servers don't stay up all the time, so they're not always useful, and their phones are not very, you know, awesome, and they just got a lot of shortcomings. But the one thing that's always been, continues to be, always been their selling point has been, you know, they're secure. If you're a big corporate user, corporate owner, and you want a secure business device, go with BlackBerry. Well, Boeing, quite surprisingly to everybody, decided to stop building airplanes for a second and replace their BlackBerries. So they came up with what's called the Boeing Black. It is an Android-based phone, but wicked awesome if you're into security. Basically, BlackBerry still enjoys a number of government smartphone contracts, which I think is really what compelled Boeing more than anything, is that, you know, if you can be the new secure phone for people who really refuse to switch over to the iPhone or the greater Android market, you can get some pretty wicked awesome government contracts. And since Boeing does, you know, your military class development, I actually think this totally fits into their product development of building, you know, phones for the military. But a new Android device forthcoming from Boeing might threaten that relationship. The aviation giant copped to developing a secure smartphone last year, but now the so-called Boeing Black has hit the FCC, providing a little more background. It'll be sold primarily to government agencies and companies engaged in contractual activities with those agencies that are related to defense and homeland security. Boom. Like we were saying, you know, they're military contractors, so they're building military devices for this kind of stuff. The device will be marketed and sold in a manner such that low-level technical and operation information, our information about the product will not be provided to the general public. So basically what they're saying is if you're they've got all these different phones, right, that are starting to come out. The Black phone is a smartphone, I think it's like France or stuff. This thing is designed for the paranoid consumer. And basically this thing is locked down. Everything is encrypted a billion times. It is like super secure. Samsung has come out with their Knox software, and it's effectively, you know, security-based software. It's supposed to encrypt everything, make sure the phone is safe and virus-free. And now Boeing Black is coming out, and they're basically trying to replace the BlackBerry as the secure phone for the military and, you know, and your defense contractor stuff. So bad news for BlackBerry is basically what this comes down to. It's one more toll of the death knell.
Which good. Keep it coming.
I know. I like watching it happen.
I know.
And then, man, I only really got one more story.
All right.
This is kind of cool. So when you watch the Netflix, speaking of, dude, they released the last 8 episodes of Breaking Bad on Netflix this last week. And I had only watched up to season 4 because they only had the first half of season 5, and I didn't want to get all like crazy angsty to watch the last 8 and buy them on iTunes. So it's like I needed an emotional break after the 4th season because it was crazy, and I was like, oh wait. And it came out, so yesterday I ran a 10K, and then I came home and I started watching Breaking Bad on Netflix. I've watched 10 episodes in the last day and a half.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And for someone who like never sits and watches TV, I feel my brain is like, oh, I'm fried from it. It's weird. But it's such a good show. Anyways, do you ever fall asleep to Netflix? Like, you know, watch it when you're going to bed, watch it while taking a nap or anything.
Maybe. Generally no, but sure.
I actually, it's one of the cool parts about having the Apple TV, right? I turn the Apple TV on and I cuddle up and fall asleep to episodes of Family Guy or something like that. And I usually watch, you know, I usually watch superfluous shows because what drives me nuts is like I wouldn't watch Breaking Bad as I fell asleep because if I fall asleep after 20 minutes, 40 minutes of this, you know, the second half of the show gets I completely lost and I have like asleep and certain platforms will just automatically play the next episode, which I would prefer not to happen because if I'm falling asleep. It's like you could be 3 episodes deep before it realizes that you're asleep, and which is super annoying. and so at this big hackathon, they came up with a solution to this, and it's awesome as somebody who owns this device. Basically, your Fitbit tracker is designed to be able to keep track of your sleep schedule, right? So with my device, you tap it a couple times, goes into sleep mode, and basically – if you're still enough long enough, it'll say, oh, you're asleep and you'll get credit for that. Well, since it's connected to Bluetooth and it's connected to your phone, and if you've got Netflix running in the background, Netflix knows when you're watching a TV show. And if it's connected to your Fitbit, Netflix knows when you're asleep now too. And so they're cool. I think this is really awesome. So basically what happens is, they're just showing – this is just kind of like a demo after a couple minutes of hacking, but everyone seems really excited about it. So I'm hoping this gets a little more attention and actually gets a couple of different options. But they're like, yeah, we can now build it into the servers into our applications where if the Fitbit tells us that you're asleep, we'll pause Netflix for you and rewind it a couple of minutes so that when you wake up the next – or you go to bed the next day – pick up right where you left off, and didn't
nice.
Miss a beat and fall asleep again. Yeah, so which I think is great, because I like falling asleep to the white noise, but I hate waking up to having missed half an episode of everything. It's funny. It's like I've seen like the first half of every single Family Guy episode.
What?
I have no idea how they end. And it's like I did that with Always Sunny in Philadelphia too, and you just miss these like crazy important plot points, where like a season later you're like, when did that happen? I feel like this is a really big deal. Like this, oh yeah, that's right. I sleep through the second half of every episode. I probably did watch it. So this would be a very cool product innovation. I hope it comes soon.
Nice. Maybe. They said, I think at the very end, that they may never see the light of day.
Aww.
But
someone will do it.
I get it. I get it. Well, cool, man. Yeah, I feel like you definitely carried us this week.
Yeah.
That's okay. I appreciate it. I keep promising everyone I'll be like, I'll be back to 100% next week. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll
hey,
see.
Hey, man. I enjoy looking at tech stuff, so.
Good.
If it's too much for you, we'll survive.
All right. All right. Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My award-winning brother, there you go.
Thank you.
Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.